Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. Civil Defense Radio is where we bring you information about all things civil defense. One of the reasons for starting this show is to inform and educate the American people about the many threats we face as a nation. Civil defense is a critical element that will enable you to get involved to make your neighborhoods and communities safer and more resilient to emergencies and disasters. There are a lot of threats to our safety and security as a nation, many of them naturally occurring, like earthquakes, can manifest themselves as small tremors or can affect major portions of the country. This week we are beginning a series of major earthquake threats, especially after last week's brief introduction to the Yellowstone Super Caldera. We will get back to Yellowstone again, but this week we are going to focus on the New Madrid Seismic Zone, a huge area that could threaten over 7 million people living in that zone that touches five states. To help me with this subject is Drew Bumbeck, returning as guest host for the show for these episodes. So let's get to it. Drew, welcome back to Civil Defense Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Preston. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was my pleasure, man. I enjoyed having you on last week and our conversations before the show and after. I thought, you know, there's a lot of information that we can cover, and you have a lot of insight with your background in emergency management and the other things that you've participated in. So I mean, it's just a natural extension of our first interview, and I'm looking forward to learning more about earthquakes and the different areas of the country that suffer from them. I know I was in the basement of ICE headquarters in Washington, D.C. in 2011 when we had that little one there. And it wasn't in D.C. It was here in Virginia. And it was felt all the way in D.C. And the basement of a tall government building is not the place to be in an earthquake, is it?
Yeah, I definitely agree, especially, you know, here in on the East Coast, we don't have seismic building codes. We don't build survivable for earthquakes because we just don't have the need, unlike, you know, California or other places on the West Coast. And so, yeah, it definitely can be a scary place to be. And even that small one that we had back in 2011 did a significant amount of damage around Virginia and the National Capital Region.
Yes, there's a lot of insurance claims during that time. But, you know, we live on a small fault from what I understand here, but that's not going to be the focus of today's show. We're going to talk about the New Madrid zone, which is actually quite large. It touches, what, five states?
Well, it really, the New Madrid states that would be directly affected by it. There's actually eight. There's Arkansas, Alabama, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Mississippi, Missouri, and Tennessee. Now, the fault itself runs pretty much between like just about St. Louis to Memphis, Tennessee. It doesn't touch either city, but it's kind of between them. And it runs kind of diagonally from the southwest up towards the northeast. And, you know, when people, you know, when people think about earthquakes in the United States, they usually think really only about California, or to a lesser extent, some of them think, oh, West Coast.
Right.
But, you know, as we just mentioned, talking about the 2011 earthquake in D.C., earthquakes happen throughout the U.S., including in the central and eastern U.S. And to be honest, until 2014, the most seismically active area east of the Rockies was New Madrid. New Madrid was only surpassed as the most seismically active region east of the Rockies because Oklahoma had that jump in seismic activity that probably related to fracking.
Yes, yes, I agree.
You know, people think, well, but wait, where's the fault line in New Madrid? Because, you know, they think fault and they think, well, first off, it's where plates, you know, either you have a slip slide or a subduction zone fault where tectonic plates come together. And And they're thinking, well, wait a second, you know, New Madrid, it's in the center of the country. It's not where it's right in the middle of the North American plate. And so there can't be a fault there. And plus, we can't see it. And you know, they think of San Andreas and you know, how dramatic and striking that is when you see it. And they think, well, there's no fault there. But the problem is, you know, it's an intraplate fault, and it's buried because it's been worn down by river process and buried by river sediment. But despite the lack of having a visible fault, New Madrid actually produced some of the largest earthquakes in U.S. history, in ever recorded in U.S. history. You know, in the winter of 1811 to 1812, there were four very large quakes, and the quakes continue to this day, not as large, but every year there's over 150 tremors in the New Madrid part of the country, in the New Madrid seismic zone. And since 1974, seismometers have recorded thousands of quakes in that area.
You know, just having that amount of activity underneath your feet would really make you uneasy, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, since about the late 90s, early 2000s, in emergency management, we've really been planning for New Madrid because, you know, the quakes that happened in the winter of 1811 to 1812, they were, like I said, they were some of the largest quakes ever recorded in the U.S. We don't know because we didn't have seismometers then. So we don't know what the course, the series, you know, how strong they were, but they, you know, they're estimated to be anywhere between 7 and like 8.2 to 8.6 on the Richter scale. So you had two in December 16 of 1811, one on January 23rd of 1812, and then the main shock that followed these three, four shocks was February 7th of 1812. And they were, the February 7th one, it's the largest earthquake ever recorded in the contiguous U.S. It's estimated to be between 7.4 to 8.6 on the Richter scale. At different places, you might see it listed as a 7.4 or a 7.7 or an 8.2.
They always downgrade that stuff anyways.
Yeah, and we just don't know because...
I've been following this a little bit for the last year or so. There's this guy on YouTube that does great analysis of stuff, and he's predicted earthquakes all around the world. He's predicted them, and I can't remember his name right offhand, but... He has covered a lot of the stuff that's been going on for the last year, especially in Texas and Oklahoma and on the West Coast, Canada.
Fortunately, you know, when New Madrid happened back in the early 1800s, the area was really sparsely populated. It did some pretty significant damage. I mean, the quakes destroyed the town of New Madrid, Missouri, which is where the seismic zone gets its name. They destroyed several settlements on the Mississippi River, caused structural damage as far away as Cincinnati, Ohio, and St. Louis, Missouri, and they were felt as far away as Hartford, Connecticut, Charleston, South Carolina, New Orleans, and they even actually caused church bells to ring across the U.S., including as far away as Massachusetts.
Wow.
And, you know, they did other things. I mean, they had an incredible effect on the landscape. And they caused massive landslides along the Chickasaw Bluffs, collapsed riverbanks along the Mississippi, and uplift and subsidence of large areas in the Mississippi River floodplain. And one of these uplifts actually caused the Mississippi River to flow backwards for a time. And so one of the problems that we have with New Madrid is that the geology in the central U.S. is particularly bad for earthquakes. In other words, because of the way the soil is, and because of some of the geological structures, they both focus and magnify the effects of an earthquake. So unlike in California, for example, if you compare, for example, say the 1994 Northridge, California quake, versus the 1895 Charleston, Missouri quake, both of which were about the same magnitude. Northridge was 6.7, and the Charleston, Missouri one, which is on New Madrid, was a 6.8. Mm. they affect a vastly different size of area because the geology of the area. I mean, another example is the, I think that the main quakes were felt, it's estimated they were, you know, the 1811, 1812 main quakes were felt strongly over a 50,000 square mile area and then moderately across about 1 million square miles of the country. And you, if you look in comparison to the 1906 San Francisco earthquake, it was felt moderately over 60,000 square miles. So, you know,
big difference.
It's a huge difference. And the additional problem is not only does the geology focus and magnify and make these quakes both have a huge effect and be felt over a much larger area, but it also makes them much more damaging. The soil is really sandy and it amplifies the shockwaves. And this creates an effect called liquefaction, where the soil stops behaving as a solid and actually behaves as a liquid because it's under so much intense shaking, and it will move like a liquid. And so when you build on this kind of soil, you end up having a huge exposure to seismic forces if there happens to be an earthquake in the area. And unfortunately, New Madrid is well known for earthquakes and very damaging earthquakes.
Yeah, it's amazing that California seems to have led in the building code for earthquake stuff, because you always hear about it, and I read about it a lot. I hardly ever hear about the Midwest having any real significant advances in building codes, but it seems like they need it more so than what the West Coast does.
Absolutely, and you know, I think the reason that California really has led the way on it is they are, depending on how you look at it, blessed or cursed with, first off, obvious fault lines that can be seen on the surface as opposed to, you know, they're buried. And they have more frequent quakes. And so by necessity, they've had to develop building codes to protect structures and keep them from collapsing. Whereas even though we have a lot of small quake in New Madrid seismic zone, we really, the last significant quake of any sort was 1895. And, you know, that was a 6.8. Yeah, we have 150 quakes a year or so in New Madrid, but they're minor and most of them can't even be felt. So people aren't conscious of it. They don't know that, you know, they don't realize that, hey, we're in this huge seismic zone that can really do a huge amount of damage. The other thing too, when you compare California to say New Madrid, not only do you have the differences in geology that make a New Madrid quake so much worse, but in California, you've got, while you have a huge amount of population, they're relatively concentrated in one area, okay? Whereas in New Madrid, another issue we have is that, sure, we have big cities like, say, St. Louis or Memphis that are directly there, and you have other big cities as well, but you have a huge number of people, and they're spread out throughout this eight-state region. Which, and then also we have another problem with New Madrid is that it's not a one-off thing. It's not by itself. Just a little bit to the northeast of New Madrid is the Wabash Valley seismic zone, which goes through southeast.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I saw that too.
Yeah. And that one goes through southeastern Illinois and southwestern Indiana. And that one's thought to be able to produce quakes around, you know, 7.0 on the Richter scale. And in fact, they're so close that the concern is that if we have a New Madrid quake, does that then kick off a Wabash Valley quake?
You know, that was one of my questions when I saw this graphic, because that one is so close. It probably only, you know, from the outer ring, it's probably only a couple hundred miles.
Exactly. And, you know, as we know, or as we're coming to learn, fault lines are really interconnected, and what happens on one affects others, you know, even thousands of miles away. And while we don't necessarily have evidence that they've ever kicked off at the same time, we think it's probable enough that for National Level Exercise 11, or NLE 11, which was focused on New Madrid, and it's the only NLE that's ever been done on a natural hazard, the scenario was actually a simultaneous New Madrid and Wabash Valley quake, and with a 7.7 on New Madrid, followed almost immediately by a 6.8, I think it was 6.8, yeah, 6.8 on Wabash Valley, because that affects that whole region and, you know, then amplifies damage in the northern part of the eight New Madrid states. Hmm. And, you know, for NLE 11, there was some modeling, some computer modeling based on the hazards program that FEMA uses, estimated that the total building loss from a single major quake on New Madrid would exceed $70 billion worth of loss. And that was 2008 numbers. So that has probably gone up by, you know, probably several billion by now. But,
oh, at least.
But the big problem there is that's for a single New Madrid quake. And unfortunately, New Madrid has a history of multiple large quakes in a series over a couple of months, as opposed to one large quake with smaller aftershocks, as is the case in California and on the West Coast. So, you know, yeah, this the fact that it has a history of series, and it probably will, when it goes next, it will probably again do it in a series, although we don't know. This will compound the damage, the cost, it will increase casualties. And what's more, I mean, it'll require sending first responders into a risky area and potentially losing responders to subsequent quakes, and it'll hamper recovery efforts. I mean, if you look at the spacing of the 1811-1812 one, you know, you had two in December 16th of 1811, and one of those was probably somewhere around like a 7.7 to an 8.0.
Yeah.
Then you have a follow-on that same day that's probably like around a 7.4 to an 8.0. Then you have a January one, which is somewhere between 7.0 to 8.0. And then on February 7th, you have your main one, which is like 7.4 to 8.6. And so it's not like you can just sit there and say, well, we've had one quake and we're going to wait 3 months and then we'll send responders in, you know? So,
yeah. That's a very hazardous situation. That's a very unique situation for that seismic zone. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a minute. Hey friends, please allow me to speak with you about something you may want to add to your regular health maintenance routine as well as your preparedness supplies. A few years ago, I came across an article in a preparedness magazine that caught my attention. My wife and I have always been health conscious and we have taken various supplements over the years. However, this article introduced us to the world of essential oils. My wife began researching to find a reputable company with high quality products. What she found was a company that we have been with now for about 4 years, using their products, many of them daily. The company is doTERRA, and their products are certified pure, therapeutic grade essential oils. Essential oils come in all grades on the scale, but doTERRA oils are, in our opinion, at the top. Sure, you can go to Walmart or your local pharmacy and purchase essential oils, but not many of them are recommended for internal use. Many of our oils are food grade and can be used orally, topically, and diffused for their wonderful aromatic fragrance and health benefits. Some of our favorites we use almost daily are lemon, clove, frankincense, lavender, En Garde blend, peppermint, and melaleuca, also known as tea tree oil. These oils have become our go-to remedies for managing our health throughout the year. In fact, we credit our oils for our overall good health. You can too. Just visit our website at Oils for Life Today. That's oils4lifetoday.com and explore the wonderful world of certified pure, therapeutic grade essential oils for yourself. And we're back with our guest host, Drew Bumbeck, and we are talking about the New Madrid Fault Zone and the Wabash Valley Seismic Zone. Drew, this these things are so close. You know, the average person like me looking at it would think that, yes, there would be a contributing factor for the Wabash to take off as well. But then just a little to the east, there's a East Kentucky, or is it East Tennessee? My map cut off.
East Tennessee.
There's also another zone over there, East Tennessee zone, seismic zone, that is not very far away either. So we could have a triple catastrophe there that would cover even more territory.
Yeah, it's certainly a good, I mean, it's certainly a possibility. And you know, I have not seen modeling on how New Madrid might affect East Tennessee. But I mean, certainly you do have the potential. And you know, if you look at the USGS's quake map that, you know, represents the levels of horizontal shaking that you have a 1 in 50 chance of being exceeded in a 50-year period, you have this giant blob centered on New Madrid that kind of connects to Wabash a little bit. You have some giant blobs out in the west, and you have a break in between New Madrid and East Tennessee, where it's green. It's not, you know, it's not gray or blue, where the colors go up, where, you know, gray is, I think it's given in percent of gravity. So it's like 0 to 4% of gravity. Blue uh-huh. would be then 4 to 8% of gravity. Green, which is not horrible, but it's like 8 to 16% of gravity, but then you get up into like 16 to 32, and then you get up into the red where it's really bad. But so you have this little buffer zone between New Madrid and East Tennessee where you get some, but you don't necessarily get as bad shaking. So you might have a buffer. I don't know. And I'm thinking that because you've got some mountains and hills in between, there might be some insulation from it. But you bring up an interesting point. And then the next concern is, if you look at that same map, East Tennessee, the quake hazard there is pretty much uniform throughout the whole East Tennessee area and connects all the way down to Charleston, South Carolina, where again, you have a pretty high quake hazard. And I think, you know, we had what, the 1886 Charleston earthquake was a pretty significant one. And Charleston, South Carolina has a pretty significant quake hazard. So, you know, if indeed New Madrid and Wabash managed to kick off East Tennessee, does that then affect Charleston and kick that off? And again, I have not seen modeling on that. But I have seen, you know, I've been very heavily involved in some of the work on New Madrid, particularly some of the planning for it ahead of national level exercise 11, and then actually heavily involved with NLE 11 as well. And I think that this is a huge hazard that when it goes, it's going to be very, very bad for the country. I mean, you know, I mentioned the estimate that the building loss alone in the area from a single quake would be in excess of $70 billion.
Yeah.
We're looking at, you know, if back in the early 1800s, I mean, it was really sparsely populated there. But since then, the population and the infrastructure has increased significantly. So, I mean, it would cause massive amounts of damage. There would be thousands of deaths and probably tens to hundreds of thousands of injuries. And these numbers could be up to 22% higher if it happened during the daytime. And, you know, additionally, we have to face the other issue is that even if the quake itself is limited to New Madrid and Wabash Valley seismic zone, and therefore the direct effects are limited to the eight New Madrid states,
Right.
The indirect effects, I mean, it's going to indirectly affect a huge swath of the country, because you're going to have massive critical infrastructure damage in those eight states. And that critical infrastructure damage, I mean, given the location, major quakes in the area are going to affect almost the entire country when the national infrastructure is disrupted, including you're going to have effects in transportation, transmission pipelines. Like, I think there's 10 natural gas and 7 petroleum pipelines that will probably be destroyed going through there. You're going to have petroleum refineries in the area taken offline. And you're going to have effects on the grid. You're going to have, I mean, a lot of trucking. I mean, that basically will kill the I-40 corridor. It'll kill all the east-west interstates, essentially. It'll shut down the Mississippi, because you're going to drop bridges into the Mississippi. You're going to have all sorts of other debris and whatnot dropped into the Mississippi. So shipping for essentially the central U.S. and the eastern U.S., parts of the eastern U.S. that connect into the Mississippi are going to be offline for who knows how long. And if this happens in winter, like the last one did, and you take out these 10 natural gas transmission lines and these 7 petroleum pipelines, and that's pretty much a given, because the uplift, the difference is going to be sometimes between 5 to 10 feet in vertical movement of the ground. So, I mean, those pipelines are just going to be torn apart.
Well, electric transmission lines can be disrupted too, because if those towers are raised 10 feet and rolled, those things stand a good chance of failing, and your transmission lines are down. So you've got all the hazards with that, and the electrical grid would be severely taxed to stay up, especially in those areas that were affected. There would be very sparse electrical service to very minor portions of that, probably.
Absolutely.
That area would be dark. You know, I hadn't even thought about the transportation aspect of it, and the trucking that goes east and west all the time through that area, and north to south as well, up to Chicago. Yep. But man, that is probably on the magnitude of a Yellowstone caldera going off, because that is a huge, huge mess should it happen. So we've got about a half a minute left. You want to say anything? Anything final?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we need to be very cognizant of this, and we need to remember that this will have, as you said, huge impact on the grid, both in that area and nationwide, because it will probably take down the Eastern interconnection.
It probably would.
The modeling on it is pretty scary, and so it's something we need to be cognizant of, and we need to increase our preparedness for basically all disasters.
Yeah, I agree. The civil defense is important. If we prepare our neighborhoods, communities, and ourselves for catastrophes such as this, then it's a lot easier to get through. If we have no power, no infrastructure, no food coming because of the transportation sector being knocked out or disrupted, then we got to have supplies of food in our pantries and our basements and closets and wherever else. So civil defense becomes even more real in something like this, because after the fact, you can't organize, because you have very little organized with. And so it all comes down to preparation. Be prepared for disaster. With that, we will sign off. Thank you all for being with us this week. Thanks again, Drew, for being my co-host for this series that we're doing. So my friends out there, please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you.